I'm at the University of Delaware, and this is actually a picture of beautiful, scenic Delaware. Down in the southern part of the state, there's a very large poultry industry. And for those of you that don't know, there's actually a lot of arsenic that is used in farming poultry. They feed a lot of arsenic to the chickens, and eventually all the chicken litter ends up back out on a farm field, you know, looking for a home, and it ends up on the farm field. So certainly, arsenic transport and arsenic transformation is something that we're pretty concerned about in Delaware. And of course, you'll hear a fair bit later on today, and this is a slide from my old research group at Stanford, about arsenic in Southeast Asia. So it's not only a problem that's from a human-caused problem, but you can also have naturally occurring arsenic. And in Southeast Asia, a lot of people are exposed, are drinking water that contains pretty high levels of arsenic. And so this is a real concern. And of course, what we're concerned about and what I'm going to talk about today are arsenic oxidation pathways. So how you can transform from arsenic 3, which is soluble, mobile, and toxic. And it's a little more mobile than arsenate because it doesn't stick to clay minerals quite as well. It does absorb to metal oxides, but it doesn't stick to clay minerals. The transformation of arsenite into arsenate, so the arsenic 4 or the arsenic 5 oxidation, which sticks to clay minerals and also sticks to a lot of transition metal oxides. But it's important to understand this transformation because it has a profound impact on the mobility of arsenic in subsurface environments. And in soil systems, there's a couple or three main ways that arsenite ends up as arsenate. You might have oxidation by iron 3 hydroxide minerals, although this is fairly minimal in most soil systems. And you can also have oxidation by bacteria with the addition of another terminal electron acceptor, so they can shuttle the electrons from arsenite to arsenate. Today I'm actually going to be talking about this last pathway of arsenite oxidation in the environment, so oxidation by manganese 4 hydroxide minerals. And the goal of the experiments that I'm going to present today, it looks very different on my screen, is I want to present some data on the in situ characterization of arsenite oxidation by hydrous manganese oxide. So this is a manganese 4 mineral, which is a very powerful oxidant in the environment, and it looks like it's a pretty good natural analog of biologically produced manganese oxide minerals, which is why we've chosen to work with this. And of course, to look at a scale like this, you need a technique that can determine the difference between arsenite and arsenate on a molecular scale. And then also we want to use a technique that's time resolved and sensitive to the reactions that are happening at the actual manganese oxide surface so that we aren't seeing only solution chemistry, which you can sample in batch reactions or more traditional column experiments. So in order to do this, I've been using time resolved X-ray absorption spectroscopy. And I know a lot of you are familiar with X-ray absorption spectroscopy, so I'm not going to belabor what it can and can't do, other than it can determine the arsenic oxidation state, and it can determine the local binding environment of arsenic on the manganese oxide mineral surface. But to give you an idea of what I mean by time-resolved X-ray absorption spectroscopy, a lot of you are familiar with a step scanning method, where maybe in 30 seconds, so from 0 to 30 here, you can collect maybe about that much data, but probably at a lot less, lot poorer data quality. And now a technique that's been coming out and that's been in use quite a bit recently is a quick scanning technique, where in 30 seconds you might be able to get an entire XF spectra rather than just determine the oxidation state. You can also use this to determine the local binding environment. We've been doing a lot of work up at the National Synchrotron Light Source in Brookhaven, Long Island, and they actually have a continuous scanning X-ray absorption spectroscopy set up. So rather than only collecting data one way from low to high, we actually collect data continuously. We go from low to high, high to low, low to high, high to low, low to high, high to low. And what this allows is you to collect a complete XF spectrum in about 2 seconds. And so you can have some real time-resolved information about what's happening at this mineral surface, and then also use it to determine the arsenite oxidation state as a reaction is ongoing. And so the experimental setup that I used up at X18, look somewhat familiar to some of you, is that X-rays are coming in through this gas ionization chamber. And then I have a column here that's packed with HMO-coated sand. And the white on either side is just sand that doesn't have manganese oxide on it. And I'm pumping an influence solution of 1.2 millimolar arsenite at pH 6 through the column, and then it comes out the top of the column to an autosampler. And so in addition to collecting information about what's actually happening at the manganese oxide surface using this fluorescence detector, I can actually correlate changes in the solid phase chemistry with changes in the aqueous phase chemistry, and use these two techniques coupled to hopefully help figure out what Dr. Sparks likes to call a very complex system. And one thing I want to point out is that 1.2 millimolar arsenite doesn't show up in X-ray absorption spectroscopy at this beam line. And so we're depending on the arsenic concentrating on the manganese oxide mineral in order to get a signal. So you don't see just the arsenite in solution using this technique. So first we'll take a look at the column effluent. And what I've got charted here is concentration on the y-axis and then time on the x-axis. And total arsenic determined by ICP hydride generation, arsenic 3 also determined by hydride generation, and then the arsenic 5 is determined by the difference between the total arsenic and the reduced arsenic. And then also manganese 2. And one interesting thing is that you see the coevolution of both the manganese 2 and the arsenic 3 at almost the same time. Now we can use this plot and, based on a breakthrough curve, plot what arsenic should be coming out of the column and determine where the most arsenic is actually being retained on the solid phase, or is missing from the effluent solution. And so if we take a look here, we see at very early time points, we're missing a lot of arsenic from solution. And then it decreases drastically, but we see another point at about 3 hours where we see a slight uptick in arsenic retention. And then gradually over the course of time, we just get down to almost all of the arsenic that we're putting in comes back up. So, as I mentioned, you can actually, while this column's flowing, I'm actually collecting X-ray absorption spectra. And what I have plotted here is the normalized derivative intensity, first derivative intensity of arsenic, or arsenic K and zanes. And if you see a peak in this position, that's indicative of arsenic 5. But if you see a peak at the slightly lower energy position, that's indicative of arsenic 3. And so using these peaks and arsenic 3 and arsenic 5 standards, you can actually quantify the distribution of the arsenic oxidation state that's being retained on the solid phase. And this is really interesting because when I first started out this project, I assumed that all the arsenic that would be retained in the column would be present as arsenic 5. And you can see very clearly that after an hour and a half, we start seeing arsenic 3 retained in the column as well, which we haven't quite figured out yet, but we're working on it. And so we can quantify the arsenic oxidation state in this column over the course of the time of the reaction. And as I mentioned, so at early time points, there's no arsenic 3 in the column, and then we come up and we level off 35 to 40% arsenic 3 being retained by the solid phase. And then, of course, you see the mirror image with arsenic 5. And so I'm going to keep this plot in kind of the corner as a reference point while we look at some excess spectra that actually provides some molecular scale information about what's happening with the arsenic coordination on the manganese oxide surface. So you're going to see this little part in the corner of the rest of the presentation. So this is, as I mentioned, if we take a look right where we're only seeing arsenic 5 retained in the column, so this maximum of arsenic retention, we can get an idea of the coordination. And it looks like arsenic is being retained both as a bidentate mononuclear complex and then also a monodentate mononuclear complex. And I have the manganese arsenic distances that are indicative of this listed down here. And if we move further on down the column, we actually don't see a whole lot of change in the arsenic coordination chemistry. And I didn't mention these are XF spectra up here. The data is in the whole line, or the complete line, and then the fit is in the dotted line. And this fit actually allows you to figure out how far an arsenic is away from a manganese or an oxygen or anything else in the system. And we move further on down the column, and still we see, it's very similar. We still see a very similar coordination trend between the two. And if we move all the way down to this point in the column, we actually see it switching from having two different kinds of arsenic to having only the bidentate mononuclear arsenic complex on the surface. And this doesn't entirely answer what's actually retaining the arsenic in this column. But if we take a look at this reaction, we have arsenite that's oxidized by arsenate, or oxidized by HMO to arsenate. And, you know, this has been widely accepted. Arsenate sticks very well to manganese oxide minerals, and it'll be taken up and absorbed on the solid base. And these complexes that we were seeing are pretty usual. However, what's different about this system is this HMO is very reactive, and we aren't even sure that we have only HMO left in this system. And so this is one place that we're going to look at in the future, is we're going to come at it from the other edge. So in addition to using the arsenic spectroscopy, we're going to be able to use the manganese spectroscopy and see if we can correlate the changes in the manganese and the arsenic chemistry. And I'm sure everyone saw, I really am not sure what the retention mechanism for the arsenite in this column is yet. Traditionally, it was thought that if arsenite bound to a manganese oxide mineral, it would oxidize to arsenate immediately and be retained. But very clearly, we're seeing 35 to 40% arsenite retained in this column. I'm not sure yet if it's an electrostatic retention mechanism, or if there's actually some sort of binding mechanism, perhaps through a manganese 2 or some other intermediate that's keeping the arsenite on this mineral surface. And so this is also, what we're going to try and figure out in the future, is what are the two retention mechanisms that are occurring? What's happening with the arsenate, but also what's happening with the arsenite? And with that, I'd like to acknowledge the Environmental Soil Chemistry Group at the University of Delaware that I've been a member of for about a year, the National Synchrotron Light Source for the spectroscopy that I did, and then funding from NSF, USDA, and Delaware EBSCOR. Thank you very much.